Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the second week of June 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh with the whole gang, CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hello.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott from the Tribune and KUT News.
Hello.
Today we're talking about Bill White releasing his tax returns dating back to 2004, the upcoming GOP convention, and who's behind the Green Party resurgence here in Texas. We'll start with Evan's topic, taxes.
I'm fascinated by this. We've talked about it, I feel like, every single week since there's been a campaign, what the White campaign is going to do about his tax returns and how the Perry campaign was just beating them about the head and face until they released them. And I guess the Perry people can claim a scalp in that their pressure resulted in the White campaign releasing its tax returns. I can't imagine that they can argue that the pressure didn't have an impact.
No, I mean, why hold them if you were going to release them? The first Perry press release was around March 9th, March 8th, somewhere in there. And it said, you need to release your tax returns for the period during which you were mayor so that people can see what you were doing while you were in public office. So they released the tax returns for the period during which he was mayor, and the Perry campaign says, well, you know, if you notice a lot of our other press releases, we said, you know, for your other public service.
It was yesterday. Initially what the White campaign did was respond by releasing a summary of his finances, and I think they released his tax returns for the years in which he was a candidate for statewide office, they said, to match what the governor had done, they said. And so that really was 2009, basically.
Right.
And what the Perry campaign had wanted were tax returns for the years prior when White was serving as mayor. So in a classic set the bar, meet the bar, move the bar maneuver, Mark Miner in the Perry campaign says, oh, well, actually, we want you to go back to when you were Texas Democratic Party chair. We want you to go back to when you were in business.
And the energy secretary.
Right.
And,
we want everything.
This is when you were a college student filing your
I guess they're not asking for the time when he was in the private sector. They're simply asking for times when he served in the public sector in some capacity.
Well, he was in the private sector when he was
Texas Democratic Party chair. All right, so they want basically his tax returns.
They want to see his tax returns. We want to find stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like getting help for your opposition research. Just like, you know, our opposition researchers can't find your tax return. Would you please provide them to us?
And of course, already we had one instance of a story that was generated off of the tax returns that's not, at least as perceived, not flattering to the White campaign. Whether there's anything to that, that's Jay Root of the Associated Press, who wrote a story today that said essentially Bill White had an investment in a company that was a Hurricane Rita vendor.
Right.
And then as a consequence of that, something was untoward. The Perry campaign has jumped on that. There's some question about the timing of the investment relative to the—
Was White an investor while they were public?
But it illustrates to me the issue, the larger issue, which is there is no good end to this for the White campaign. If the White campaign thought it was going to release tax returns and that the Perry campaign were going to go, okay, on to the next thing, no.
And meanwhile, the debates are being held hostage here.
Well, and that,
Perry is saying that essentially he will not debate White until, at first it was, until he releases tax returns back to 04, now it's releases tax returns back to the 90s.
Let's call that what it is. Crap. The Perry campaign, if the Perry campaign thinks it will get away with not allowing a debate to occur between him and the major party candidate for governor over what they perceive to be an insufficient release of the mayor's tax returns, it is pure and simple crap. It should be called crap by everybody, and no one should allow the Perry campaign to get away with it.
No, they should allow the Bill White Power Hour on B-low stations all across the state and just let him go and talk for an hour.
But, and I agree, the debate issue has been tied to this thing, but the White campaign completely mishandled this tax return thing, and there is no good end for them now. Because if they thought that by releasing the tax returns 90 days in, they were going to shut the subject off, clearly that's not the case. I don't necessarily find Mark Miner and the Perry campaign's response to be reasonable. I mean, you know, now you got to do more.
But they're playing.
This is the way the game is played. What movie or play is that from? I forget which. Right. But Glenn Ross.
Well, you know, to quote you from just a couple podcasts ago, or maybe the last one, we were talking about the politics.
Our podcasts are going to be used against us.
Yeah. Well, when you were talking about the politics of the environment and the EPA, how much does it matter? How much can the tax return issue resonate with voters?
Well, I think that the White campaign in a red state, in a year in which it's not popular to be a Democrat, has an uphill battle anyway. And every additional mark against them, real or perceived, hurts. And if there's any question at all about White's honesty, openness, and truthfulness, again, legitimate or not, it's just not a good thing to have to deal with.
Right.
Right. And if he was going to release them at the beginning of June, he should have released them 3 months ago.
And Ross asked. You may have still been lounging half dressed on the beaches of Crete yesterday when this happened. But Ross Ramsey hyphen Styles yesterday did ask.
Well, we all get the Styles hyphen.
Did ask. That's today only. We're all changing our byline
for
that.
What a tribute.
Ross did ask Katie Bacon specifically yesterday, if you were going to release them, why didn't you release them 3 months ago?
Right.
And her answer was,
we wanted to get all of these comparisons together. They put out a document yesterday that was actually sort of interesting that compares, it's on their website, it's linked in all the stories and everything, that compares his disclosures to those of Perry. Now, Perry has a bunch of assets in blind trust. It's one of the great canards of state governments. And my stuff's in a blind trust.
I don't know what's in it.
I don't even know what's in there. And releasing it, this is always sort of interesting. And if we released the contents and doings of the blind trust to the public so that they could see what's being done on my behalf, then I would be able to see it and it wouldn't be blind anymore. So in order for it to be blind to me, it has to be blind to all of you too. So the White campaign's trying to make a little hay here and say, Perry's stuff is not available. It's not. That's true. And so I, Bill White, have revealed more than they have. And in order to make these comparisons, they say we had to pull all of this stuff together and it took a little time and that's why we're releasing now.
But you know, the J. Root story on the Statesman's website, I encountered the AP story on the Statesman's website today, there were comments, and one of the comments, it was on the on Burnt Orange. I was linked back to Burnt Orange from something else.
Right.
And there was a comment on Burnt Orange from somebody who is clearly not of the Burnt Orange ideological variety, who said basically, the reason that Bill White is not releasing his tax returns prior to 2004 is the stuff he wants to hide from us is there. And so this is an outrage that White's only released this much. That's exactly the kind of response that the Perry campaign wants.
Right, right. I mean, that's that old, you know, if you've got siblings or you went to school and you had friends and you taunted each other, it's like, oh, what are you not showing us? What are you not, you know, it's the stuff you're not showing us. You know, holy cow.
And the White campaign needs to understand this, and they probably do, and it's not a situation that I think they're happy to be in, but they're in it.
This is gobbling up time, which is sort of interesting. I mean, there's six months till the election, Ben, this is
the answer. My answer was a smart-ass answer. His answer is the real answer.
Right. We're talking about this instead of what we're talking about.
Opportunity cost.
Right. Opportunity cost.
That's exactly right.
We're not talking about substance. We're talking about this.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, right. Now, there's a question of whether anybody listens to politics this early.
Or podcasts, for that matter.
I'm in the camp that thinks that they do, that you set the tone of a campaign, that you set some of the arguing points of a campaign, that you set the topics you're going to talk about pretty early before the public tunes in. And when the public tunes in, everybody is sort of keyed in on a set of particular issues. And if we go into September, when voters do start paying attention, and we're talking about whether and when they're going to have debates— You know, really, come on. And we're talking about whether and when, who's going to release.
Has there ever been a gubernatorial campaign with not a single debate between the major party candidates?
Would anybody notice, really? I mean, I'm not a big debate fan
But
myself.
See, now, this but, is where know, you, this,
right.
Ross, this is where you and I part company. Okay, I think that any major party candidate for an office who does not debate, who does not stand before the voters and ask to be reelected should be defeated because it's outrageous in this kind of a system to not have access at least one time in public to the person running for office. It's an outrage.
I don't disagree with that. I do think that debates are kind of a lame way to do it, but we can have that conversation in September. But my point is, if you're talking about whether or not to have a debate in September instead of arguing about policy issue A, policy issue B, policy issue C, then whoever would be on defense on those policy issues, usually the incumbent, is winning the fight.
Skates, basically.
Right.
Right. I agree. There will be a debate, Elise. There will be. And there'll probably be more than one debate, and we'll probably be cut out of it as a media partner because that's the unfair of the world, that's fine, but there will be a debate, and probably more than one, and that's good. And all this will be for nothing.
But meanwhile, this is a huge diversion, you know, because they could be publicly debating education and the budget and all that right now. So, but instead, we're going to debate debates until September.
And if anybody wants to read, you know, 150 or so pages of 6 years of tax returns of Bill and Andrea White, they're right there on the internet.
PDFs, downloadable.
Knock yourself out.
Wallpaper your bathroom with them.
They also linked to the Perry financial disclosures and tax returns that have been released so far. I guess a lot of those were on the Houston Chronicle website, which I thought was actually a nice little trick. You know, hi, I'm Bill White, and I'm revealing Rick Perry's tax returns. So.
Well, if you're a college senior who thinks that you're ever going to run for office, go ahead and set up your blind trust the moment you graduate from college.
Oh, seriously? don't you think?
Tips from Ben Philpott. Let's move on to the GOP convention coming up this weekend in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Dallas.
Where is the convention in Dallas?
It's at the convention center.
It's at the
Hyatt Hotel. It's downtown, next to the electric popsicle. You know, on the Dallas skyline there. And you know, it's the biggest. You know, they get all these. You know, all the high points here. The biggest convention, political convention in the world. 14,000 delegates. You had no idea there were that many red, white, and blue sequins.
Why do they need that many delegates?
Red jackets.
Everything's bigger in Texas. Everything's very interesting. It's one of those, you know, it's sort of this weird mix of a Star Trek convention and a political convention. And, you know, it's fun. It's kind of interesting. They're going to have a fight over the party chairmanship. Kathy Adams was named to that post or took that post 7 months ago. She's got a couple of challengers. They're fighting over the finances of the Republican Party, whether the party's in debt, whether the direction of the party is correct, whether the party matters, all of those kinds of things.
And you know, I'm used to these sort of last-minute shows of unity.
Right.
And so I got a release. I saw in my email box the other day, I got a release from Meckler's campaign for party chair, and I just naturally assumed it was to announce he was dropping out and endorsing Adams because I figure, oh, unity. No, he's just punching her in the nose still.
Right.
This is not a happy chairs race.
It's not a happy chairs race. And, you know, the direction of the party and sort of which groups control the party is kind of interesting here. Kathy Adams came out of the Eagle Forum. Meckler sort of came out of the grassroots. They all sort of have their constituencies here, and it'll be kind of interesting to watch. The big show is, you know, Perry comes out, and this is the first moment of unification or unity or whatever you want to call it after the primary. And so you would look for Kay Hutchison to endorse Rick Perry here. I think that's probably not going to happen at the convention. I think it's probably going to happen in the wee hours of Friday morning.
She won't come on stage?
She's not going to do it at the convention. She's going to do it apparently at the Texas Federation of Republican Women breakfast on Friday morning, which is a little bit less public, and it's not in front of all those crazy delegates
Do we know for a fact this is happening?
You never know until it's final, but that's what it looks like right now.
Bring our camera and go, if that's the case.
I was thinking, at the end of this podcast, by the time you've heard this, Ross will have blogged about this. It sounds to me, I mean, if that's in fact true, I think that's actually pretty interesting.
Right, that's where we're going. So we've got that, and then, you know, they try to pull together all of their, their pushes for various candidates. I think Bill Flores will get a push here. He's the Republican running against Chet Edwards. It's a target race for state and national Republicans.
Campaign managed by Matt McCulbiak-Styles.
Right, yes. I think we're also going to see a little bit of a push for Kiko Canseco, who's running against Ciro Rodriguez. That's the other target race on Congress. Yeah. And then, you know, the Republicans want to expand their margin in the House a little bit. It's three or four votes now, depending on how you count.
Okay, so who are the stars they're going to be parading before the delegates? Which House challengers? Are there any Republican House
challengers? Jim Murphy, probably.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jim Murphy, former House member. You caught me cold.
Don't name Workman, probably. He's got a shot.
Paul Workman in Austin.
There are probably a couple more.
If you could see my brainwave, it would be flat. It looks just like Nebraska right now.
Who's running against Carol Kent?
Your brainwave is moving to the Pac-10.
I couldn't get it out fast enough. Oh, he beat me.
Oh, boy.
Excellent. No Nebraska jokes will go.
We should actually move to political football here.
That's a good topic.
Sort of an interesting thing.
Invite Buddy Jones down from the ninth floor or whatever it is. Yeah.
Our Baylor region right here in this very building.
Yeah. But there'll probably be some House Republican challengers, right?
Some House Republican stuff. And... you know, there'll be little meetings off to the side here and there, you know, people trying to raise money, trying to do this, trying to do that. Joe Strauss is going to, you know, come in and introduce Republican incumbents who are being challenged. I'm with these guys, Republican challengers, kind of a delicate hat trick here. He's trying to figure out which Republicans he can endorse without offending Democrats who have also supported him to date. So that's going to be kind of interesting.
Well, that's actually, you know, that's interesting. I would wonder, so how many Democrats supported Strauss last time?
60-some-odd.
60-some-odd.
64, something like
that. It would
be
interesting to put on one side of a piece of paper the names of all 60-some-odd Democrats who supported Strauss,
right.
And then on the other side of the ledger would be all 60, or it's probably fewer, because some of those Democrats don't have Republican opponents this time.
Right.
But any of those Democrats who have Republican opponents, is Strauss going to endorse any Republican opponent to a Democrat who supported him?
He has said he's not going to endorse.
Didn't he address this at Trib Live?
He said he's not going to back anybody challenging an incumbent Democrat, that he'll leave that to other Republicans. But, you know, there's shades
including Democrats who are opposed to him.
There's shades of this. Right, right.
Right.
There's shades of this. So, you know, we'll see.
Strauss is not going to endorse Dunham's opponent?
No. No. I don't think so.
Dunham's one of his chairs.
Right.
On that,
right. You're going to endorse somebody against one of your chairmen? I don't think
right.
so. I don't think he will.
It's not like it hasn't happened in the past.
Right.
I mean, come on. This isn't like the sun rising in the west.
But right. not everyone will get the Patrick Rose treatment either. Not everyone will get
really
the speaker
not anybody
coming.
But Patrick Rose.
They show up at your fundraiser.
Yeah, right. Here is the speaker shows up at Patrick Rose's fundraiser. A bunch of other Democrats have asked, apparently, and been said, you know, well, we're probably not going to do that.
Well, the problem is you do it for one. It's like, you know, bringing gum to school. Do you have some for everybody?
It does raise the question, why'd you do it for the one, mm-hmm. knowing that the question was going to follow? But
right.
So. Well, he did it in one of the most conservative Democratic districts in the state.
Except, let's be frank, Patrick Rose was not going to lose.
Right.
Patrick Rose is not an endangered Democratic incumbent who Strauss had to come in and shore up. So it does beg the question, what exactly was behind that?
Right.
Right?
Maybe
right.
Rose is going to flip to a Republican.
Dun, dun, dun. You're supposed to have an organ behind
now
me.
We're
so should we? At what point will we get the phone call?
I'm wondering.
suddenly we've turned into like TMZ here. We're now just spreading.
Let me rein this back in
gossip.
Real quick and just say.
Is somebody moderating?
Right.
This?
Thematically.
She's still in Crete.
I'm coming back. I'm right here. Okay. So.
Yeah.
So my question is. I feel like, or my point is, that I feel like the party doesn't really matter that much. The party structure doesn't really matter that much because Republicans control every major statewide office and the House and the Senate anyway. So really, Perry is the de facto leader of the party. And, you know, Perry gets to kind of anoint other candidates and all that. So the party chair seems like kind of relegated to this second-tier role.
It's a very good question. You know, it's vaguely Reeve Hamilton-like question, does the party chair matter?
Well, you know, yes and no. I mean, you know, there's 14,000 delegates. 14,000 people are going to go home from this thing enervated or excited and talk to people. And, you know, so you start your grassroots thing that way. So check that box. It's a fundraising mechanism. They've got a victory campaign, victory committee that's going to be headed by Susan Combs, the only statewide elected Republican official who does not have an opponent. Democratic opponent in November, so she's sort of free to run this thing. So she's going to run the victory campaign, which will raise $1 or 2 or 3 million and help candidates around the state. You know, it matters kind of at that level. It matters at the level of, you know, sort of a heat sink level. One of the interesting things at a Republican convention, if you like this kind of stuff, is they always come out with this 24 or 25 page party platform that's got every single hot button litmus test issue you can imagine. I mean, it's really fascinating to read, whether, you know, everybody can find something to disagree with in this thing.
But, well, both parties' platforms are just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I mean, it's not even
really
to be believed what's in these things. And that's both parties.
But that's actually a function in the party, because you do it, you give them an outlet for these crazy ideas, they put them in the party platform, everybody forgets about the party platform.
Never heard from again.
You don't have to listen to it in ads in November. So. It's also an early place where you see things like voter ID will pop up and, you know, some of the issues that will pop up in the campaigns and later in the legislative thing. So, right.
But you see what I mean. Like, I see Strauss as more of a Republican leader than Kathy Adams. I see Perry as more of a leader of the Republicans than Kathy Adams. And the party structure, I would go to Perry's office before I'd go to, you know, the communications director at the Republican Party on many fronts.
You know, sort of the textbook version of this is policy comes from the office holders, and the political mechanics are handled by the party. I think that those are probably merged. And if you have a governor who's been in office for 10 years, that's where the party is. I think you're probably right.
Let's go from the Republican Party to the other end of the political spectrum, to Ben's interest, the Green Party. And who's paying them?
Well, you know, I did a story a couple of weeks back when the Green Party actually came up with 92,000 signatures to get on the statewide ballot in Texas for the first time. Now the Dallas Morning News over the weekend has a story out saying, you know what?
Slater, good story.
Yeah, saying that the $200,000 that was probably spent to get these 92,000 signatures came from a nonprofit corporation in Missouri called Take Initiative America. And
it's gotten to the point where Ben has to bring in notes.
I'm bringing in notes. It's better than I'd rather be made fun of for notes than be made fun of for not knowing the names.
For the record, the rest of us just kind of ad lib on the fly.
It's not a choice, Ben.
Exactly. I have to. Anyway, the question is: some Democratic lawyers have said, you know, look, that's a corporate donation. That's illegal. You can't do that.
Or it used to be.
Right. Yes, that's right. You can't do that to get to fund your petition drive to get on the ballot. If it were an individual donor, no problem at all. But being a corporate donor is the problem. And you know, of course, the Democrats have come out and said, "Hey, look, this is evil Republicans funding getting the Green Party on the ballot because the Green Party will siphon off votes from the Democratic candidates." I kind of think that is, to quote you, a crap argument, because the Republicans completely dominate the state for the most part, and they've had to deal with Libertarians taking 5 to 6% off their end for 10 years now.
You know, Democrats have been recruiting Libertarians for races for a long time. And there were four or five or six, I'd have to go, I don't have the number right off the top of my head, but there were four or five or six House races, for example, in Texas decided last year, won by a Democrat, who got less than 50% of the vote. And it's because a Libertarian bled off some votes. And the conventional wisdom on these things, not always true, but often true, that Libertarians take votes away from Republicans. So you've got a district like Valinda Bolton's district in Austin, where she's running against a Republican in arguably, you know, Republican territory, vaguely red territory, and they throw a Libertarian into the race, and Valinda walks away with a win. This is Bill Welch 2 years ago. So it's a little disingenuous for the Democrats to come out and say, well, the Republicans are trying to bleed off Democratic votes. Well, of course they are, the same way that Democrats bled off Republican
right,
votes
but the question is whether, and this kind of gets back to the issue of why taxes. You know, the question is not so much are the Greens in there to bleed votes. It's was the mechanism that got the Green Party on the ballot somehow illegal or untoward or inappropriate. I think, in fact, there's a Dallas Morning News editorial today calling for disclosure on who funded the effort to get the Green Party on the ballot. And they believe, at least, or the editorial page believes, that there's an issue here larger than the simple question of the Green Party siphoning off votes. Yeah. It's the thing that you alluded to, which is, was there some illegal or untoward process that resulted in this happening?
Right.
And, you know, at the moment, the Green Party says, yeah, we're not exactly sure where the money came
from.
Everybody
in the Green Party is high right now. I don't actually think they're saying anything.
Medical marijuana, that's all it was.
Exactly. No, I mean, come on. This is not really a serious – I mean, it's not really a serious story, except – to the extent that, because I think alleged malfeasance on getting them on the ballot, there wouldn't be a whole lot of discussion of this, right?
No. I mean, because, you talk about, even if you talked about the idea of whether or not they siphon votes away from the Democrats, they're going to siphon a whole lot less away than the Libertarians do to the Republicans. I mean, they're just not, they're not an organized party. They're not an organized party in Texas.
Well, and the reason the Libertarian thing works is because if you're a conservative voter and you're in a district and you look at this thing and you say, well, you know, I don't like the Republican in this thing, but I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. Then you vote for a Libertarian. Most of these swing districts, not all of them, but most of these swing districts are not Democratic districts where someone's looking at a Democrat and saying, I can't vote for that Democrat, but I'm not going to vote for a Republican. It's just not the state of the state at this point. The Libertarians are going to bleed more votes than the Greens are.
Although I think it's interesting, in a year in which there's dissatisfaction with the president and with the Democratic Party for not being sufficiently true to liberal principles, you may find some people to the left of the Democrats running who go, you know what, these are all corporate Democrats, I don't want to support them. But again, the numbers are not that great, and there aren't enough Democrats who are competitive in races in which a Green Party candidate would frankly siphon enough of enough votes to matter.
Right.
So I'm not sure this is very as much of a story.
All right. It's been great to be back with y'all.
Oh, we missed you.
If only
you could see her, she's 10.
If y'all have any questions for us, you can email us at podcast@texastribune.org. We'll be back next week. On behalf of Evan, Ross, and Ben, I'm Elise. Thank you for listening.